Mormon Stories Podcast is a production of the Open Stories Foundation. All donations to Mormon Stories are fully tax deductible and go directly towards keeping the podcast alive and towards building a community of support for Mormons like you. To support the podcast or to join the community, please become a monthly subscriber today at mormonstories.org.
Well, so we're kind of already touching on this. I want to formally ask for pieces of advice that you would give to, ward members, that you would give to family members, dealing with similar things, spouses, children, and then to even the people who maybe are struggling with some of these issues themselves.
Who should go first?
Doesn't matter to me.
Okay, I'll go first. Let's see. What have I got written in the advice column here?
By the way, I don't do advice.
Yeah.
No, truly. It's rarely solicited and seldom listened to. So I don't do advice.
Yes. No, I get that.
Well, lucky for the listeners, I don't have that policy. Just teasing. Let's see. What have I found useful? I think as a good place to start, I think it's important to understand the theory behind why people have mental illness. Understanding at least a little bit about how it's thought that medications work, understanding the serotonin and norepinephrine and other chemical that's thought to be largely responsible for mental health issues is a good place to at least learn about. My number one recommendation to anyone, okay, I have two main pieces of advice. The first one is to take a CBT course, cognitive behavioral therapy. And I just think everyone should take a CBT course. It should be a required course for every human being.
Right.
Just take it. If you're listening to this, just take it. You won't be sorry.
Where did you take something like that? Where did you find a resource for something like that?
The insurance that I had at my job at the National Laboratory that I had before I went back to school, they had a mental health program that offered very cheap, I think it was $5 a session, CBT course.
Okay.
And it was absolutely brilliant.
And this was in a group format?
This particular one was in a group format. We had packets and walked through things and shared things with each other, and it was very good, very well done. You can learn most of the information online, but I would suggest taking a course even in a group setting. It's very useful for understanding people skills, for understanding how relationships are, how to behave in a relationship, to understand why you believe what you believe about yourself and how to combat that when it's negative. It teaches you how to set proper boundaries in your relationships. I mean, it's brilliant. Just take it. Okay, I can't emphasize that enough.
Okay.
It's good stuff.
Yes, I back that up. I love cognitive behavioral therapy.
Yes. If you deal with somebody who has mental illnesses, then it at least provides a tool for you to understand what they probably have been exposed to, because they've probably taken that course or are being advised to take that course if they're in any kind of counseling. And it gives you tools for understanding how you can better your relationship with them. The other big thing that I think is the most important is simply empathy. I think you have to spend some time thinking about the worldview of the person who is struggling. You have to try to understand why they act the way they do, why they see what they do, what they must be feeling inside, and how that might make you feel. It's the whole, walk another mile in someone else's moccasins type analogy here. One of the keys for me to that have helped me do that is observing my mom's behavior, observing why she does what she does, when it's a good time, when it's a bad time. And I've often joked with my mom that I know how to push her buttons better than anyone else. And, you know, I kind of say that jokingly, but it's the truth. I know how to interact with her because I've spent a fair amount of time observing her and understanding and making mistakes and realizing what worked and what didn't work and what I should say and how far I can go in what I say and things like that. And, you know, fortunately for us, we're at a point now where, you know, we're doing this podcast, speaking very candidly and openly about sensitive subjects. And I think that there's an understanding and a sufficiently healthy relationship to allow that. But it's taken a lot of years. And that's the only other thing I would say is that it's not reasonable to expect to fix or to have a good relationship with anyone, but particularly if that relationship is burdened by mental illness, it's not reasonable to expect results quickly. It just takes a lot of time to develop patience and understanding and empathy and trust with people. And, you know, like I've said before, it's taken us 10 years to repair what was a fairly damaged relationship. So patience, empathy, and CBT are my...
That's great. Now, I'm really glad you mentioned that piece about the time, because I think that, you know, many people will listen to this podcast and be probably impressed by the ability of the two of you to speak so openly and lovingly to one another, and they may almost... you know, again, those negative kind of self-destructive voices will say, well, why can't I have that? You know, or why haven't we been able to get to that point? And I'm glad that you pointed out that it's a process and people can get to this point, but it does take time and effort.
Yeah.
And desire.
Desire and self-awareness.
You have to want the relationship to be better.
Yeah. Well, catching it in the terms, maybe not as so much advice, but I like what Jay said, you know, things that I have found useful. What would you say to that, Wanami?
Okay, well, the first thing I want to say is I just let him think that he knows all of my buttons to push because he likes to think.
Oh, boy.
All by yourself. I've pulled some out. Anyway,
see, that was the masterful pushing of buttons right there.
Right.
You see how well I did that? She doesn't even know that that's what I was doing. I knew she would say that.
Oh, you are so bogus. Okay. I would say get help as soon as you recognize that there's a problem. And that's a tricky thing to say because... denial likes to play a big part of it. We don't like to admit we're maybe as not okay as we thought we were. Mm-hmm. But as soon as you recognize that there could be, just even get it checked out. Don't put it off because you're worried about what a neighbor or a friend or anybody might say, because if you are in that boat, generally, the sooner you can reach out and get professional help, perhaps the sooner it can resolve itself rather than later and more damage to many relationships. And it is hard. It is really hard to face yourself in the mirror and be honest and say, I've got a problem. And this isn't something that I can just say to my buddy and get over. I need professional help. The next thing, openness and honesty is absolutely totally have to be elements, especially where it's concerned, I believe, not only with your therapist, but with your children and your family members, even if it hurts. Mm-hmm. Because if you're not, eventually it will be found out. And then you have one more thing added to the pile of deal with, and that's an issue of distrust. And you don't need more to deal with. So part of that openness and honesty is recognizing the role communication plays in that. But it's, you need to be careful, especially, I believe, with our families, because it needs to be age appropriate. You can't have a 5 or 6 year old and dump on him the whole world and, you know, have him understand or get it. So it's hard, especially when, like, I'm at a place where I'm not thinking real clearly and I just want them to know I care and want to help them. But I have always believed that if you keep talking, you stand a chance. You can't, if you haven't talked to your children the first 13 years of their lives, you can't just expect to step in at 13 and have a good communicating thing going on. And so it's establishing those skills and that honesty and having and valuing the relationship and the person and who and what they mean in your life to say the things that need to be said, not hurtfully. Or if sometimes it moves into a hurt area, which it can, be as soon as you recognize that, be open to apologizing, owning your part of it, not blaming, accepting responsibility for the things that you said that were hurtful, and then trying to move on. The last thing I think... not last.
Could I just say something real quick in addition to what you said there?
No. Now, the last thing I want... go ahead.
I was going to say that, you know, just because someone in that position... I know one of the things that you have struggled with, Mom, is allowing yourself to believe that you don't get to control how we respond to the situation, and you can only own your part, and I have to own my part. And I certainly brought something to the table. You know, in high school, I brought resentment to the table, and I have to own that part. And so I would say, as part of what you're telling people, is that, you know, if you are the one who has the mental illness, you need to recognize that it's not all your fault, that people interact with you and they get to choose how they interact with you, and that you're not entirely responsible for everything that's going on. So don't feel like it's you that's destroyed the family or anything like that. We all have to choose how we deal with the situations we're presented with.
Yes, but mother guilt runs the world, so... You know.
See, Jay's talking like a systems therapist, so that I'll have to side with Jay on that one.
Yeah,
but I'm a mom too, so I get the guilt piece.
Yeah, well, and I know exactly what he's saying and referring to, because this is something, as I've become a little bit healthier, I have tried to stress and recognize, and that's being responsible for. I'm, and this is what I've said 100. My kids get. I'm responsible for me. If I did this, if I said this, then I'm the one that has to try to repair it. And I truly believe that. But it's hard to separate when I feel like I was responsible for so much of that part. It's hard to, you know, delineate and say, okay, whatever. But the next part I want people to know is, if you seek help, if you seek therapy, and if you don't connect with the right person, whether it's psychiatrist, social worker, psychologist, whoever, if you don't connect after a few visits and it's not feeling right, again, don't take that one on and make it your failure. Some things just don't work, but don't give up and quit looking. Ask around. Talk to people that you know who have had therapy, that have had good therapy relationships, and keep trying to find, because there is one that you will be able to work with and move at different paces than with others. And it's important to find them and establish a trust with them so that you can do that at whatever pace is comfortable for you. And sometimes it will be faster and sometimes it will be slower as other things happen in our lives. But don't give up. Just because you maybe haven't found the right one, don't give up.
Well, and I will totally back that up. I think one of the most frustrating things for us as therapists that's coming out in pretty much all the recent research is that when it comes to therapy results, it doesn't matter how long we've been necessarily in the field. It doesn't matter what type of therapy we do. It doesn't matter so much the interventions that we're doing. I mean, these all play a role, but what matters the most is the bonding and joining between therapist and client. And that's very frustrating for us because so much of that is not in our control.
Right.
And so we want, you know, we want these other things to be more of what, but yeah, the bonding, the relationship there has to feel comfortable. And I try to tell all of my clients that, because without it, you're just never going to get as far as you could. And it can actually be harmful in some regards.
Is it? Yeah. And it's equally frustrating. Like, I can't say equally because I'm not a social worker, but it's as frustrating for those of us because it's like, oh, crap, now I've got to go through the thing of trying to find another. And then how many visits do I make? And then that's infringing on my insurance. If I only get, you know, 12 visits a year or 6 visits a year, and I know I need a lot more help, you know, so there's a lot of reluctance to make that shift. But boy, if you make it and hit and gear into that right person, you can move mountains in very few sessions, right. And then you might get hung up and then you can move on again. So, you know, there's that side from my perspective, that's a frustrating piece too. But just like all doctors, none of this is an exact science. Right. And so you just keep looking for the best fit.
I feel like I have to say one other thing.
Of course you would have to.
Sorry.
That's okay.
But I just have to say that if you have suicidal thoughts or you're approaching that level of thought, please get help. There's lots of suicide prevention lifelines and things, but don't just sit and think that nobody cares or that there's no help available or that you're the only one in the world who thinks like this. Because there are plenty of others and there are plenty of resources available to you.
And in fact, hotlines are a good place to start getting some recommendations about potential therapists. If you call one of them and tell them you're in trouble and they talk to you a little bit, find out what the issues are, they can help guide you to someone that might fit that position for you, be a good fit. So...
yeah, I completely second that for sure. There's I'm trying to find the number as we speak. I think we'll link to it as far as the suicide hotline. That's it's a national hotline and anybody can dial into it. You can also just call 911. I mean, that's just the easiest thing you can do if you're at that point.
Are most big hospitals, you know, I know like the University of Utah and they have their mental health hotline set up, and or we have Valley Mental Health. You know, there's quite a few within most communities that, you know, you can call.
Right.
So,
yeah, I think there's one general national one, and then they probably guide you to more local ones as well. So absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's lots of resources for sure. You spoke a little bit about you know, obviously finding a good therapist. Can you speak a little bit more about, because you seem to have had a lot of experience within the mental health field. can you speak a little bit more about what has been helpful for you? What types of therapies, medications, what's your general view? It sounds like you have overall a general view for mental health. I also am assuming that not everything has been positive for you.
You assumed correctly.
Okay.
Medication has been a bust for me.
Okay.
We have tried every classification that there is, even the old school ones. We've tried all of the new ones, each new one that comes out. We've tried the augment ones like Abilify. I can't think of too many that I haven't tried, and we have not had success. For a long time, I was on Wellbutrin. Did we think it helped? No, not really. But it seemed to cause the fewest side effects of any of them. So, okay, we'll stay on that one.
And as a side note, and just to intervene, some people in close proximity physically and emotionally to my mom think that medications do work. So just thought I'd throw that out there, that it's not, at least not as cut and dry to some other people, that they don't work for you. For you.
Oh, you mean that there are people within your family that when your mother is on an antidepressant of some sort do notice differences in her, is what you're saying? You're not just talking about in general.
That's correct.
I see.
Oh my gosh, I did not know that.
Hmm.
See,
now
I said to you I would learn. Okay, well, tell me which meds those were and I'll hop on them.
I don't know the details.
Okay, well,
we'll set up a family therapy session after this.
And I'm not saying that there haven't been some where maybe I felt
I think a
little bit better, but there, with every medication you take, there are side effects. You're not going to have one that doesn't have side effects, and sometimes you have to weigh the side effects. If I'm getting a little bit of benefit and the side effect is huge, I'm not going to take it. I'm just not. If the benefit was huge, and the side effect was medium, I would do it. If the benefit was huge and the side effect was huge, maybe I would do it. But if most every drug medication that I've been on, I have had side effects with. And so one frustrating thing for me, and that I finally started saying, was, okay, I'm tired of taking these. If they don't seem to be a lot of help and they're burning out my kidneys and liver by taking them, hey, if I'm not getting it, if I'm taking this and I feel this crappy, I can feel this crappy not taking it and not have that going on in my body, because I used to be really concerned about health and my body. And when they even first proposed medications, I'm like, no, I don't do that. I might take aspirins, but you know, for headache. And so I was really resistant. But when it was apparent that I was very sick and needed to try something, that was when I did. And we've also been addressing quite a few issues. I had severe insomnia, like 2-3 hours a night sleep if I was lucky. And it would be as much as early waking and not being able to get to bed. Or I might go to bed and wake up all night long. Or, you know, so it takes many forms, and it seems, and so we've played with sleeping meds, and I really hate sleeping meds. That's just my own thing I'll put out there. When you're desperate, and when I am desperate and have been days without sleep, then I will take one because I know that's scary. But you can get too many things going on at once, and it's hard to tell what's helpful sometimes and what isn't helpful. The other thing, and I just want to bring this back to diagnoses a little bit, it became extremely frustrating to me to keep hearing a different diagnosis. Well, we think this, well, we think this, well, we think this. And I'm going, you've got a manual, it spells stuff out. How can it be that hard to come up with what's going on with me? And why do we keep pulling different rabbits out of the hat? And so, again, what I came to understand, first of all, was the diagnosis isn't critical many times. It doesn't change if I'm sicker or less sick, if I know the diagnosis. And so knowing it can have very little impact. And so I started to not put as much weight in the diagnosis as much as what's going on with me. And I think it's important not to get hung up in a diagnosis and perhaps reading tons about it, because you can start to create symptoms from what you read that maybe weren't there before. And that sounds really sick, but you have to understand if you're that sick, you are sick. And so those things can happen without me intending for that to happen. And so I would say, you know, it's good to know what they think is going on, but if they throw you something else, it's good not to, you know, go off the deep end because I didn't go off the deep end. I was just like, you know, why can't we get this clear? But then I go back to, none of this is a perfect science. Medicine is not a perfect science. And if you read these diagnoses, which I read a lot of them, and with every medication I took, I got the product insert and studied that and knew the possible side effects because I wanted to know the potential harm that I could be doing. And that's the way I operate. When I was diagnosed with cancer, I checked out a lot and I read as much until I had reached a saturation point with me and didn't need to know anymore, and then I was through and put it away. But so it's when you read these diagnoses in full, if you can get your hands on a DSM manual, you can see that there's crossover in many of them. And that's why it's not really easy to put your thumb right away on something or see potentially different areas that could be combining and making it not easy to get to the root of what's going on. But even if you get to the root of what's going on and give it a name, doesn't mean you fix the problem.
Right.
So those are just some of my frustrations with mental health, and yet I'm at a place where I understand it better now. I get it better now.
I think you bring up a lot of good points. I mean, diagnosis, I think, definitely has its place as far as helping people put a name to something that maybe they thought, you know, gosh, maybe I'm just crazy or
right.
I'm mean or I'm, you know, what. And so it does kind of, I think, help people and even loved ones to kind of, oh, there's a label, there's something that I can understand.
Yes.
Now. So there's help in that. At the same time, there's a negative side to that. You know, sometimes when we label people, we only expect certain things of people, or we limit people somehow. So there's a lot of discussion about this, I think, even within the mental health community is, you know, and then I think you bring another good point as far as a lot of these diagnoses have similar symptoms or have aspects of different symptoms within them. And also if you read through a lot of the symptoms, we all have some of those symptoms.
Right.
So
right.
It's just, you know,
right.
Yeah. So where does it become, you know, a disorder versus just a normal part of life? You know, like depression. Right. I mean, we and anxiety, we all have depression and we all have anxiety, but where does it become so dysfunctional to the point that, you know, it's really causing problems to, you know, in your day-to-day life? So I try to tell people who are depressed or anxious, the goal here is not to do away with this feeling completely. You know, it's not realistic. The goal is to make your life just more functional. So,
right.
So yeah, I agree with much of what you're saying. And I do think that those are questions that need to be asked within the mental health community on a regular basis, and continued research and continued just, you know, questioning our own ideas and beliefs about what we think we know.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it is, you want your therapist and your mental health people to kind of have a handle on what it is you might be coping with, so that they can develop an approach with you of how to work within the confines of what that diagnosis is. Mm-hmm. So I'm not saying it doesn't have its place. I guess what I'm saying is it's really easy when you're not thinking really on top of things, you know, to become your diagnosis. And we're not our diagnosis.
Yeah, to not let it define you, exactly.
Yes.
Yes. It's something like, I have a broken leg, but I'm not a broken leg.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
Yes.
Right.
So, great.
I was glad that you brought up that it's not always easy to tell where things begin and end, because I think as an observer, as someone who interacts with someone who has mental illness, it's really hard to tell where a person just what they do and what is normal behavior versus, I mean, a lot of the things that I think I perhaps once ascribed to illness, as I've matured, have found, oh, actually, it turns out that people actually just see things different than I do, actually. And you know, there's some of that going on, and it's hard to always determine where the illness begins and ends and the person just normal behavior begins and ends. And so I guess it's useful to at least understand and watch for the signs that might give some indication.
Right. Yeah, and even in the, you know, if people want to look at places like the DSM-4, and of course a lot of this is Googleable these days. Is that a word?
It is.
But yeah.
That was a great use of the verb to Google.
Yeah, was that a good one? Thank you. But it's a lot of these things, it's not just the symptoms, but they'll have attached to them a time frame. So have you been dealing with these symptoms for so many weeks, you know, or so many? Yeah. So and I think that's very helpful.
How long has it lasted? It's, everybody has it this day, but if it's gone on for a period of 2 weeks or more with this degree, then it's, yeah. So they do define a lot of things like that.
Right. And I think that's very useful for people to know. So,
yeah.
Okay, anything else as far as in the helpful category to think about, or are we pretty much done with that segment?
I think that's all for me.
That's all for me.
Okay. Well, so I think I'd like to finish then with each of you maybe giving some closing thoughts as to going back to our Mormonism, where you currently are, maybe in your relationship with the Mormon faith. And then separate from that, where you are with your current relationship with what you would consider your God, your divinity, your universe, however you want to couch that.
Okay. Let's see. So, still, you know, I'm definitely Mormon. I plan to be Mormon. For me, it's both a culture and a people and a community and a tribe and a belief system and an organization. And there are elements of those, of all of those, that I believe in and adhere to. I think for me, after faith crisis and other things that I've been through, I have a tendency to view things in a naturalistic light. That is to say, whereas once I think I was prone to immediately jump to perhaps supernatural explanations for various phenomena, I'm now more inclined to see a naturalistic view of the world. Things happen. You know, the world is messy. It's unfair. It's not subject, from what I can tell, it's not subject to a few rules or any particular theology. It seems to me that there aren't clear boundaries, and there aren't clear ideologies that seem to explain things always perfectly. And so I have a hard time for me adhering to one particular one. I think Buddhism has a lot to offer me. I know that lots of Mormons who go through a faith crisis like Buddhism. I'm no exception to that. I've read and learned a lot about Islam and some other Christian faiths. And I think overall there are good people everywhere in the world. And I don't find one particular ideology or theology that seems to satisfy for me. So I adhere to a rather loose belief system. This is kind of interesting for me because I usually don't define what I believe in. I'm usually carving out what I don't believe in or what I'm uncertain about. So, there are certainly parts for me of Mormonism that I just don't think are doctrinal or theology at all. And I think many of today's modern Mormons would agree with me. A lot of those things are historical legacy items. And there are other things that I do believe in. I have a lot of uncertainty with regard to a lot of the truth claims that we have in the church. And I personally tend to focus on the things that I think are the most important. And I think I've mentioned those throughout this podcast. For me, love and charity and compassion are the things that are most important. And things like appearance and money and one's sexual preferences are, for me, just not that critical. And I guess that part of that goes along with the sort of messy worldview. So I still very much consider myself a spiritual individual. I particularly gain a lot of insight by viewing various religions and theologies in a metaphorical light. I really love the way things are framed by Joseph Campbell and in his mythologies, his views of mythology. And so I really appreciate those kinds of things. I'm not one who wants to see God stamped out of our lives because I think that God plays an important role. Even if whether he exists or not is perhaps less important to me than the good that I think comes from believing in general. And I think that there's power to be had in belief in general and holding things sacred. And I think that has value. So I'm one who tries to take those things for what they are and run with them and sort of leave out some of the things that I think are more frivolous and that I don't necessarily think Christ would have endorsed. So I try to read scriptures and read spiritual books. I try to take time for meditation, and I still pray and go to church regularly and have a temple recommend and try to go to the temple when I can, and I have calling, and I try to serve. And for me, service is a key ingredient to my the fabric of my life. I get tremendous pleasure, satisfaction out of serving, and I try to maintain that. So I kind of want to tie it into to my mom here and say that I'm pretty happy that our relationship has been able to weather the storms that have been that we've faced, including the faith crisis. You know, it would have been easy for my mom to toss out what I had to say, or to ignore me, or to consider me an apostate, or all kinds of other things. But she's hung in there with me, and I love her all the more for it. So that's all I got.
Thank you. That was very nice. Mom?
I'm going to go first with my relationship with God, because my relationship with God, based on what Jay likes to call the emotional experiences, or the warm fuzzies that we feel and ascribe to whatever, the spiritual experience or Holy Ghost or whatever, I have had quite a few of those. For me, God, it is not a question of whether he exists or not. He does. I don't know that I care what the form is, or it's I shouldn't say care. I don't know that it's important to me exactly how this being we call God works. I used to go crazy thinking, okay, so there's 6 billion people on the planet, and I'm supposed to believe that he hears all of our prayers. He hears my little prayer, my little bed, and me, you know, for whatever it is I'm hoping for. And how can that possibly be? And then I realized it really didn't matter, because I had enough prayers answered that I didn't care how he did it. I just knew that he was able to do it. So I would say that at this point in my life, my relationship with God is stronger than probably my relationship with the church, and I revere that relationship. It means a great deal to me. And it has seen me through some incredibly tough times in my life. I am still Mormon. I do feel like I have an affiliation with the church that probably will not end. But as the years have gone on, I think I've relaxed some in my viewpoints and my expectations of what the church should do for me, or could do or can do for me. And I tend to look at it as a pretty good place to be, where there's a lot of good people that are trying hard, and that's not such a bad thing to do on a Sunday morning, is be with good people that are trying hard. But I'm not as rigid in attendance, like I have to go to the whole 3-hour block or it doesn't count, or any of those things. If I go to sacrament meeting, because that's generally where I'm fed the most, then to me, that's my activity, and that's my decision, and I get to make that call. And again, if God is judging that, then I will have to answer for how I chose that to be in my life. But I don't think we're meant to be puppets. I think we're put here to think for ourselves, to ponder, to pray, to research, to discuss, and to find the things that, or the things, or the doctrine, or the group of people, or whatever, that help us get through each day the best way that we can. So far, I haven't found anything that works any better than Mormonism. And so I give kudos to many programs that they have. I think they've done much good in our world. I have nothing detrimental to say about them. It's more the things that we all deal with on a weekly basis as we go to church, and that's the people that teach and want to go a little bit tangenty on us, and I worry about that because I know it can harm people that don't have strong backgrounds. So I tend to set it up how it works best for me, and I feel okay with that. And if I go to 3 hours, then that's okay too. It's where I'm at that day. I think that I have become much less structured in how I look at the whole of our church and the process and of being Mormon and what it is. And I think that for me, that is a good thing. I can only speak for me. That is a good thing.
Well, thank you. I guess I just want to close with just thanking the two of you so profoundly for having spent this much time with me tonight. I think you have shared so many bits of wisdom. You've shared, I know, what's very difficult history, and just to see the two of you be able to do that in such a profoundly loving way is very powerful, and I hope that resonates with many of our listeners. So thank you very much.
Thank you. I hope someone gets something out of it.
Yeah, I hope so too.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll hopefully meet some other way, some other time.
Thanks.
So, okay. Thank you. Good night.
Uh-huh. Good night.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us today on Mormon Stories. Music today was provided by the Saber Rattlers. Check them out at saber-rattlers.com. The Mormon Stories logo was generously donated by StudioCase.com. Thanks for listening.
Come, come, ye saints, no toil nor labor fear, but with joy wend your way. Though hard to you this journey may appear, grace shall be as your day. Tis better far to drive, do this and joy, your hearts will swell. Oh, all is well, all is well. journeys through.